bar shift, submitted by Ace in the Hole. My story happened 2 years ago when I was 26. I was planning on driving to my parents' house about an hour away for Thanksgiving, and was going the night before just to be with family and maybe see a few friends. I mean, everybody knows Thanksgiving Eve is the biggest party night of the year outside of New Year's. And I wasn't super thrilled when I got a call from my boss to work that night after I had made my plans. And he was in a spot. I work at a popular bar in my city, and of course we do a big business on nights like this. But my coworker, I'll call Tom, up and quit that day. No notice. Just said he was done and that was it. We had three other people on for the bar that night, but my boss said he really needed me as the only other people were newer and were relegated to working at a back bar where they sold only beer and not mixed drinks. My boss told me that he was also going to work and was putting off his plans, so I thought I shouldn't be a dick and that I could make the drive after a shift that would take me to midnight. He promised me two extra days off and double time for an 8 to midnight shift. He was mostly a cool guy, so I did it and then packed up all my stuff in my Audi just so I could leave from the bar, drive to my parents' town, and still have an hour to see some buddies if they weren't already trashed when I got there. I got to work and we were hopping by 9. The only problem was we were still short-handed. My boss never came in and followed through with his plans to take off. Total clerk's move, if you get that reference. We were slammed, and I quickly found out I was going to be there until 2 a.m., at least, as the man in charge. There was no point in being pissed off about it. It's just the way it was going to be. So the night went on, and everyone was getting really trashed, as per usual. And as annoyed as I was just planning on what I was going to say to my boss when I got the chance. As the night started to dwindle and people realized we were at last call, there was a group of three guys by themselves who were more than three sheets to the wind. As the last song played and people were filing out after we made our final call, these three guys kept standing by the bar. I wandered down to them and let them know that we were closing and gave them the old, "You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here" speech. One guy muttered something under his breath and I said, "Hey, fellas, let's not ruin the night. Be safe, but we're done here." One of the other guys was a little more vociferous and kept saying, "Oh, one more drink, man. Just come on, one more beer." I said, "Guys, not tonight. Let's just all get out of here and enjoy Thanksgiving." I didn't want to have to call over a bouncer and was just trying to be as cool as I could. Finally, the guy who was talking a lot said, "Okay, guys, let's go." But the one who was muttering looked right at me and said, "You're a fucking pussy. When I see you on the street, I'm going to kick your fucking ass." I'm very used to drunk talk, and I'm not a small fry kind of guy. I certainly don't start fights, but I don't even like the idea of being in them. That goes triple for people who are more than wasted, especially when they're in my bar. The three guys started to move towards the front door where Charlie, our bouncer, was standing. He was just saying goodnight to the rest of the people who were leaving. That's when the muttering guy turned around and whipped a bottle of beer right towards me. It sailed over my shoulder and smashed into some of our top shelf stuff behind me, and that was it. I yelled for Charlie, but he was already in action. He grabbed the guy by his arm and the back of his neck and literally threw him out the front door onto the sidewalk. The guy hit the concrete, and from inside I could hear him howling in pain, and his two buddies ran out to help him. I came out from around the back of the bar as Charlie was telling them to just get the fuck out of there and not come back. The muttering guy got to his feet and was very wobbly when I got to the door, along with two of the other bartenders and another bouncer. Muttering guy was yelling about his knee, and when he looked up and saw me, he said I was a dead man and he was going to fuck me up. Charlie just told him to get going or it was going to get worse for him. The two other guys grabbed their friend and started walking down the sidewalk, with the muttering guy limping pretty badly. I didn't care, fuck him. The sidewalks were a little icy, and anything we told the cops would be what the cops were going to hear if it came to that. There was no way they were going to believe those guys' story. Charlie closed the door, I locked it, and we got to our basic once-over cleanup. The last thing I was going to do was spend more time there that night, and I didn't want anyone else to either. So we got the basics done, hosed down the bar mats behind the bar, and our staff took all the garbage and bins full of cups and beer bottles out to the dumpster. I told everybody, "That's it. We're going home. Thanks for working tonight. Happy Thanksgiving. I was turning off the lights when I heard some yelling outside, but figured it was just other revelers on their way home. When I looked out our front windows, there was no one there. I just shrugged, ready for my drive back to my hometown. I was going to miss my friends, but was hoping on seeing them later that day. I locked up and went out and got into my Audi. I got onto the surface streets to take me to the highway, navigating through people still wandering around in the streets. And when I finally got onto the on-ramp, I noticed a car right behind me, but just figured it was someone quite inebriated or just not paying attention. I mean, they were right on my ass. When I got onto the highway, I stayed in the far right lane to allow the person to pass, but they didn't. They stayed right there on my ass. They were so close I couldn't see the front end of the car and was looking to see who it was at the wheel. I accelerated a bit, but the car stayed right behind me. I decided to change lanes to see if the person was just going to take an off-ramp that was coming up pretty quick, but they followed me over into the middle lane. As I was cursing under my breath about idiots on the road, the car swerved into the far left lane and then pulled up alongside me. Well, well, well. When I looked over, it was the Three Musketeers who had been escorted out of my bar. I guess they waited for me to leave and were now pulling this crap. In the back seat was the muttering guy who threw the bottle at me. And now he threw yet another bottle at me. It smashed just underneath my driver's side window, and that's when I realized my phone was dead. I was going to try to call 911 through my car, but the Bluetooth hadn't connected. The car was getting very close to me, and I was checking all my mirrors, seeing no one behind me. I remember thinking, great, I'm going to have to handle this without anyone witnessing what these guys are doing. I moved to the far right lane again, and they followed right over, and another bottle came my way, but it didn't hit my car. I hit the gas and pulled away from them, thinking that I would get off at the next exit. But they once again got behind me, and just as the exit was coming up, I feigned like I was going to get off, but then relying on the handling of my car, I swerved back onto the highway, hoping that they wouldn't be able to make the same cut. There was a concrete barrier that popped up right after the off-ramp. Unfortunately, they did make the same move and sped up alongside me again. This time, the guy in the front seat was hanging out his arm and giving me the finger and yelling something. I hit the brakes and gave myself enough time to swerve behind them and then over into the left lane, and then I hit the gas again. They were driving some sort of Honda, and I figured now was the time to really put my Audi to work. I got up to about 125 miles an hour, and they were now way behind me on a still non-busy highway. I could still see their lights, and I was trying to put as much distance between us before I could get to another exit, get to a gas station I knew was there, as I did need fuel, and then plug my phone in and call 911. I was also hoping there were more people at the gas station just in case they followed me. When the exit came up, they were just a pair of dots behind me, and I didn't use my directional. I just flew off the ramp back onto a surface street and went up to the gas station. I immediately plugged my phone in once I got there and called 911. I told them about my situation, and they asked if the car had followed me there. It hadn't, and I continued to talk to the person on the line, and she basically said if the car wasn't following me anymore, I should just fuel up and get to where I needed to be. I explained to her that I still had a long drive and had to get back onto the highway as I was heading home for Thanksgiving. She basically just wished me luck and said to call back if something else happened. There wasn't anything she could do. This was based on the fact that they had no idea where the car could possibly be at that time. And I even told them who the people were, and I could probably get their names based on the fact that they used credit cards in my bar. But the dispatcher said I would have to do that in person, and that was something she couldn't handle on a 911 call. Great. I got out of my car after hanging up and looked around and didn't see any sign of the other car or the guys. I quickly filled up and thought for a second about getting some coffee, but thought better of it and just needed to get out of there. I got back into my car, got back onto the highway, and got up to a little over the speed limit. I knew what I had done earlier was running a very high risk as fast as I was going. I mean, it was Thanksgiving, and I figured even if I did get caught, I at least could explain to the cops who stopped me that I was being followed and harassed. But then I thought all I had was a decent-sized dent on my driver's side door and no witnesses to what had actually happened. I'm sure even though I was sober, the cops would not have been happy with me. Traffic had picked up a little, and while it wasn't heavy, I was happy to see other cars here and there heading in the same direction I was. I kept my eyes peeled for the other car, but didn't see anything for about 15 minutes. But of course my story isn't over, and I'm pretty sure everyone has already figured out that the guys came back. Actually, they were on the side of the road when I passed them. I noticed them right away, even though I was in the far left lane. They certainly noticed me. As I looked in my rearview mirror, I saw the car pull back onto the road. Here's where the real cat and mouse chase started. They continued to follow me, and I now called 911 again and started swerving in and out of cars. Yeah, I know, extremely dangerous and stupid, especially with the fact that I knew many of the drivers I was swerving in and around were probably drunk as hell. I didn't care. I mean, I do now, but I didn't then. I just wanted to get away from those guys. They didn't follow directly behind me, but kept changing lanes as I was maneuvering as best I could. And finally, I got to where there were no cars in front of me, and that's when they once again got right on my ass. All while this is happening, I was telling the dispatcher about the earlier call I had and that the fact that the three guys were still there. I heard a loud bump on the back of my car and realized they had just thrown something else at my rear window. 911 was still asking me questions, and I said, "Look, they're throwing stuff at me now. I know you can't really do a lot. I'm coming up on the state line, but can you please let the troopers know up ahead what's going on and that these guys are still following me?" The dispatcher said she would, but I didn't really believe her. She was so nonchalant about the whole thing, and I was crazy thinking in my mind, wondering if it was the same woman I had talked to earlier. We got to the state line, and the guys were still on my ass. They dropped back, and I figured they were going to stop as we were now in a different state. But nope, they took one last fast run up alongside me, and that's when I saw the passenger in the front holding a gun out of the window. All things being honest, I had no idea if it was real or a BB gun or what, but that scared the living shit out of me, so I hit the gas once again and buried the needle. My adrenaline was running so hot, I wasn't thinking about anything other than the road in front of me. And about 5 minutes later, I checked all my mirrors, and the car was gone. I breathed a sigh of relief as more traffic picked up, people getting onto the highway, and I was slowly calming down. Checking my mirrors, I didn't see them again and figured they had finally given up. And then it dawned on me, after all this time, I never got the license plate. But then I remembered I still had their names and planned on filing charges when I got back to town. I was also going to call the next day to let the police know everything that had happened and that I was going to submit their names as soon as I could. The rest of the drive wasn't eventful, and I got home in one piece. My dad had stayed up waiting for me, and I told him everything that happened, and he just shook his head. He just looked at me and said, "I guess you did everything in your power to stay as safe as you needed to." And at the same time, I could also tell he was very concerned about the speeds that I was driving at, and what I was doing to get away from those guys. Oh well, that's just a worried dad. I ended up having a decent Thanksgiving, and when I did get back into my town, I did get their names and reported them to the police. Again, all things being honest, nothing happened other than the muttering guy getting in trouble for throwing the beer bottle in the bar. The police said they didn't have any evidence to press charges on any of the things that they had done on the road. No witnesses, and I couldn't prove that the damage to my door had been done by them. So basically, they got away with it. A small charge for the damage done to the bar, and that was it. That's my story. It was a pretty messed up situation, and even trying to enjoy Thanksgiving with my family was not the easiest, as my nerves were still running on overdrive. Just goes to show you that sometimes people get out of hand on holidays. I haven't seen them since, and the only satisfaction I got out of all of this was yelling at my boss for making me work as long as I did. As I mentioned, he's a good guy, but what a total asshole that night. Looking back, I'm just glad that nothing else happened, and I'm very glad that I never found out if that gun was real or not. Everybody stay safe. I hope you all enjoy your Thanksgiving. Jeff, submitted by Sandra. I'm a 27-year-old woman. I've been in recovery for 6 years, and I'm a thankful recovering alcoholic. I've been a member of a 12-step group for my 6 years of sobriety and am very involved in service, helping others to achieve the good things that I have without alcohol. Every year I volunteer with my home group on Thanksgiving Day. It's a meeting that involves serving a potluck Thanksgiving dinner for those who don't have family or just want to share in recovery with a good meal. It's usually a pretty big meeting, and I know lots of them go on in my area. Some people spend their days going from meeting to meeting. God bless them. Always so happy to see people staying sober and being around those who love them, who might be on their own otherwise. These meetings are always a lot of work, but they're super fun and very rewarding. However, I wanted to share this one time where things weren't so good. I got to the center where we hold our meetings early to help set up and welcome people in. Just get things organized for the meal and meeting. Tons of laughs and really great people. And about an hour before the meeting was set to start, people were still bringing in dishes to pass. And that's when a guy who I had never seen before come into the meeting and realized he was early. Of course, we didn't tell him to leave. We just asked him to jump in and help out after introducing ourselves. There were about 10 of us working together. He introduced himself as Jeff and said it was his first time at this meeting. And that's what my group is all about, welcoming all who are seeking to stop drinking and enjoying time with others who don't. Jeff seemed real nice and immediately began helping out and was getting along with everyone. I mean, that's usually how it works. About 15 minutes before the meeting was to officially start with a speaker, I lost track of where Jeff was as people were coming into the center and commenting on all the good food that was being laid out. A little before we got things started, I noticed Jeff was back but seemed a little off. He was still very engaging and laughing, but I got the suspicion that perhaps he had gone outside or someplace else in the building and had something to drink. This is also something that is not unheard of. We get all kinds of people in all phases of life, some sober, some not, but we welcome them all with open arms. After a few minutes, one of my friends in the program came over to me and mentioned the same thing that I had noticed. I went over to talk to Jeff and didn't smell anything on him, but he certainly was in a different mood. I kept it in the back of my mind as the meeting got going and just settled in to enjoy the speaker and then got everyone situated for the meal. Tons of food, coffee, non-alcoholic drinks, and fellowship kept the merriment going, and everyone was enjoying themselves. I wasn't trying to take anyone's inventory, but I was looking around for Jeff and noticed that he was disappearing every once in a while. Of course, others noticed, and we pretty much determined that Jeff was drinking outside in his car. One of the old-timers went over to talk to Jeff about what was going on, and he finally admitted that, yes, he had been drinking. A small group of people went over to Jeff and talked to him about what was going on and how they could help and see what he was struggling with that day. I wasn't part of that, but I heard later that he had broken down and confessed that he just couldn't stop drinking. But this was the place for him to be, a place of recovery and a place to get started. The meeting and dinner wrapped up and we all pitched in to clean up. I was planning on heading home for a bit before going to my family's and enjoying Thanksgiving with them. Some of the guys convinced Jeff to either get a ride or an Uber home, but he insisted he lived nearby and was just going to walk. No one had any idea how much he had to drink, but no one wanted him behind the wheel, and he apparently agreed to that. I said goodbye and started my walk home, as I didn't live far from the center either. That was one perk of having that home group. It was always in walking distance. I'd put an earbud in and was just listening to some music as I was walking down the sidewalk alongside a fairly busy road back to my apartment. It's not the best part of town, but my apartment really kicks ass on the inside, even though it's not in the greatest neighborhood. I was planning on moving out soon, and I'll get to that later. I moved a little bit sooner than I had planned. As I was walking, I just got the feeling that someone was watching me. The sidewalks were fairly empty, with only a couple of people walking around. I got to an intersection with a gas station and a Walgreens, and remembered that I wanted to grab some toothpaste and deodorant, so I ducked inside and got my stuff. I thought about feeling the way that I felt, but shrugged it off and started thinking about the rest of my day with my family. I was really looking forward to that. When I got outside, I looked through the parking lot back towards the sidewalk, and for a second, I thought I saw Jeff at the corner, but I looked down and when I looked back, there was no one there. There was another building next to the Walgreens, but again, I just figured it was the experience that I had in the meeting, and that was why Jeff was on my mind. To be honest, I had been saying some prayers for him, that he would find sobriety, at least for that day. I continued walking to my apartment, and when I got to the front door, I shuffled my bag in my hand from Walgreens and punched in my door code. Once you get into the vestibule, you have to punch in again for the doors to get into the building. And if anyone were to visit me, they'd have to use a phone to call my apartment and you can buzz them in, just like on Seinfeld. I got to my apartment and was going to take a shower when my intercom buzzer went off. I hit it and said, "Hello," but no one answered. I waited for a few minutes to see if whoever was there was still there and going to buzz me again, but nothing happened. I got my shower and was drying my hair when I heard a knocking at my apartment door. I assumed it was one of my neighbors, so I wrapped myself in a towel and went to the door to look out the peephole. There was no one standing there, so I just said aloud, "Hello?" No one answered, and I went back to drying my hair and get ready. When I was finishing up, the knocking came again, and I quickly ran over to the door to look out the peephole. But again, no one was there. I was starting to get irritated by this, so I immediately texted both my neighbors on either side, as well as the guy across the hall. After a few minutes, they all texted back that they weren't home and wished me a happy Thanksgiving. I did the same, and then I texted the superintendent to see if he had been trying to get a hold of me, but he let me know that he was actually in Florida, and he also wished me a happy Thanksgiving. I gathered up my things and was getting ready to go to my car when another knock came at my door. By this point, I was more than irritated and was close enough to the door to whip it open. There stood Jeff. For a minute, we were both silent as we looked at each other, and I finally said, "What are you doing here? How do you even know I live here?" In the back of my mind, I knew exactly how I knew I was here, because he obviously followed me home. How he got into the building was another question, but I also assumed that someone from the building had come in and allowed him to walk through without knowing who he was. That has happened from time to time. Jeff just stood there for a second, and I could tell he was even drunker than he was at the meeting. And he just said he wanted to say hi and give me another happy Thanksgiving wish. I told him I appreciated that, but he should really leave, and I told him that it wasn't right for him to be in my building, and it certainly wasn't right for him to follow me home. He just gave me this goofy smile and stood there, and then said, "I'm sorry, I thought you said I could call you if I needed anything." I gently told him that he could, but following me home was not okay. I told him that he needed to go home, stop drinking, and try to get to two more meetings that day. I told him to download an app on his phone where he could find meetings to get to, and to call anyone else that he had numbers of if he needed a ride. He just stared at me blankly, and then kind of wandered off down the hall to the elevator. I shut my door and stood there pretty pissed off that he had the brass ones to do what he had just done. I called my sponsor and let her know what happened, interrupting her Thanksgiving meal, but she just told me to chalk it up as another drunk guy and to just say a prayer for him. I gathered up my things once more and headed to the elevator. I was looking down at my phone when the door opened. I just wandered inside. When I looked up, there was Jeff. The door shut behind me and the elevator started to go down. Then I told him once again that he needed to leave, and at this point, he tried to move towards me to give me a hug. I backed up against the wall of the elevator and told him in no uncertain terms that he was out of line and that if he didn't get away from me, I was going to call the police. That's when he knocked the bag out of my hand and shoved me into the wall. He immediately jumped on me and tried to kiss me and locked his leg between mine and kicked out one of my legs from under me. I slid to the floor on my butt, at this point screaming for him to get away from me. It seemed like forever for the elevator to get down to the lobby floor, and he kept pawing at me and telling me that he needed my help and that I should just give it to him. I was reaching for the pepper spray in my purse while battling him with my other hand, and I did get a good crack across his face. He stood up and then raised his hand to hit me, but his drunkenness left him a little off balance, and he was a little slow about things, so I was able to roll to my side while his hand smashed against the elevator wall. Thankfully, the elevator stopped and the doors opened up. Two of the residents who lived below me were waiting for the elevator. I screamed that this guy was attacking me, and Jeff took that moment to push past them, knocking the one woman onto her butt as he ran towards the front door. I quickly called 911 on my iPhone and told the person who answered that a man had just attacked me in my apartment building and was exiting our front building and gave her the address. She asked if everyone was okay and I said yes, but this was not okay and someone needed to apprehend this guy. Jeff made it out the door by this time and I was telling the two tenants what was going on. I was pretty open about my sobriety with everyone at this point and didn't care about my anonymity. About 10 minutes later, a cop showed up and I gave him a full description of Jeff, and he said he was going to check the perimeter of the building after I told him I was going to my car to get to my family's house. I was shaken but not stirred. I know, bad pun. He told me to wait there and came back another 10 minutes later while the two tenants stayed with me. The cop said that he didn't find Jeff around the building, but he was going to walk me to my car and suggested that I stay at my parents' for the rest of the day. And he would be letting everyone know who was on patrol to drive by and keep an eye out for this guy if he came back. I wanted to make a formal complaint, but it was pretty hard to do seeing as I don't really know who he was and didn't even know if Jeff was his real name. The cop walked me to my car and I got in and he gave me his card and told me to call him if I needed anything or if any more trouble happened. He did ask me again if I was okay and if I needed medical attention. I told him no, but I was going to follow up with everyone. So I was warming up my car, and when I started to pull out of our lot, there was Jeff across the street watching me. I fumbled for my iPhone, but now he was racing towards me and suddenly was at the side of my car trying to open my door, screaming for me to let him in or for me to get out. He started pounding on my driver's side window and kept saying that I was supposed to help him. Finally, I got 911 dialed just as he broke, or rather spiderwebbed, my driver's side window. I looked on in horror as his arm and hand were now bloody and he kept smashing on the window. I was trying to scramble over to the other side of my car while screaming into the phone about Jeff being back. And once I got on the other side of the car, he ran around to that side and tried getting in, leaving blood all over that window too. I was still screaming at the dispatcher, who was trying to calm me down, when suddenly Jeff disappeared from the side of my car. I looked around and saw that the cop who had originally been out was still there and now had Jeff and was throwing him towards the back of my car. I started to get out, but the cop yelled for me to stay where I was as he was struggling with Jeff. Jeff was putting up a hell of a fight. When I heard the cop yell out, "Taser," and that crackling noise that you hear on TV, Jeff let out a scream and fell to the ground, but got back to his feet pretty quickly. It seemed like forever that they were struggling, but it was really only a minute or so before the other cop cars pulled into my lot, and all these cops jumped out to help with the first cop to get Jeff. Another taser was shot at him, and this one worked, and they were able to get him out on the ground and handcuff him. At this point, I was told I could get out of the car and was led away from the immediate scene to give yet another report of what was going on. Jeff was still screaming his head off that I promised to help him, and that this was all my fault for lying. They got him into a car and I was unbelievably shaken. Turns out, of course, his name was not Jeff. I'm not going to share his real name here. But he was under the influence of not only alcohol, but PCP. After time, I found out that he was a pretty well-known offender in my town and had a habit of going to various meetings and organizations and doing the same kind of thing he did to me. He had never been caught, but he had been reported many times, and there was never any evidence against him, so basically he was getting away with it. He was going everywhere and anywhere. Self-help groups, church groups, 12-step groups, you name it. Any place that he could show up and stalk people. The cops took him away, and I called my dad and asked him to come get me after telling him what had happened. My dad said he'd be there right away and came and got me after I parked my car and the police did their thing looking at it. I did press charges, and Jeff got some jail time for a variety of things. I want to stress that this is not how my program or the program works. It was an anomaly for my home group. Nothing like this has ever happened, and nothing like it has ever happened since. But the police did take the time to notify all kinds of groups that they should be wary about people like Jeff, and Jeff himself, even though he was in jail. Everyone was told to notify them if he showed up at anything, from art shows to you name it. I know that blows anonymity, but safety is more important than that. I never saw Jeff again and pray that he got help. being in the throes of addiction is an awful thing. And while I was terrified that day, and I'm still terrified in a lot of ways when I go to my car or when I'm by myself in public, I hope he's better and not doing what he was doing. I ended up moving from my apartment when my lease was up a couple of months later, and I found a new home group closer to where I live. I always drive to it, even though it's less than a mile away, and I always have someone walk me to my car when I get there or leave to go with someone else. To anyone out there struggling with addiction, I just want to say there is help out there if you really want it. I don't want this story to be discouraging to anyone considering getting help, but I will say, be very aware of your surroundings. While we always welcome anyone to our group, everyone be vigilant and take care of yourself. To Jeff, wherever you are, I wish you sobriety and serenity, and hope that this Thanksgiving is a better one for you and anyone of your family or friends. Okay, gang, as is now going to be tradition moving forward, let's end with a funny one. This one comes from Madison. All of our turkey roasting stuff is in our basement, and we never look at it until the day before Thanksgiving or Christmas, because that's the only time we ever use it. So just like always, my husband brought everything up one year to start prepping dinner. I opened the roasting pan, and it was filled with mouse poop. Like a solid layer of little mice turds just caked to the bottom of the pan. We scrambled and found another pan that was barely big enough to hold the turkey, so it cooked totally uneven and tasted like, well, like shit. Hey gang, thanks for listening to this episode of Uncle Josh's True Scary Stories. If you have a true scary story of any nature that you would like to hear on this podcast or channel, please email it to UncleJoshTrueScaryStories@gmail.com. I read them all. If you haven't already, please like, share, and subscribe to this channel and podcast. And of course, leave a comment below on YouTube. I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Follow me on social media. All the links to that are in the description below. And everyone, have a wonderful and safe Thanksgiving holiday. I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, be wary of things that go bump in the night. It could be anything. A ghost, a monster, or the guy next door.